Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. 2 weeks ago, just as I was beginning my Savage Africa series on this program, and as if to prove my point, a young white woman in Mississippi, one of many like her across this country, lost her life on the altar of racial equality. Jessica Chambers was a vivacious and energetic 19-year-old white woman from Cortland, a small town in Mississippi, in Panola County, an area that in recent years had seen an influx of diversity. Urban thugs had added to the already large black population, and the gang subculture that took hold embraced newer non-white immigrants too, including some non-blacks and even some whites, especially white women. Jessica was like many white teenagers today. Her life was saturated with mass media, music, television, teen magazines, major internet sites, which glamorized blacks, especially black males, as the ultimate in power, masculinity, and desirability. Her history classes in school and the history she gleaned from the media taught her that blacks have been mistreated and oppressed by white people and were therefore especially deserving and worthy. She was told in church that it was morally wrong to discriminate against or dislike blacks. She was imbued with the idea that to reject them or judge them or their behavior negatively was a grave social wrong, and that it was a positive, even noble, moral good to accept them, associate with them, and yes, give her young body sexually to them. And this she did with enthusiasm. Images taken by Jessica and her friends and posted to social media sites have surfaced showing her in the company and embrace of black males, and it didn't take much further investigation to discover these blacks were linked with gangs, drugs, and crime. Postings on social media indicate that young Jessica had been for years involved with black men, beginning in her mid-teens, if not earlier. One picture, taken when she was in high school, shows her being kissed by a black male, Brian Rudd. Evidence has come out showing that in recent months she went through a drug rehab program and was trying to distance herself from at least one black male who had hooked her on narcotics, and possibly get out of the black gang scene, where she had been a fixture since long before she became an adult. A letter she wrote to her niece while in rehab has been released, in which she talks about getting away recently from an unworthy male, possibly not Rudd, but, according to those who knew her, also black. But if the uncensored reports of her friends are correct, a former black boyfriend, and possibly his fellow gang members, apparently couldn't take no for an answer. On the evening of December 6, Jessica told her parents that she was going out to get some gas and a bite to eat and clean out her car. She went to the only convenience store and gas station in her town of 500, the social hub of the community and run by a Muslim immigrant, himself closely tied to black gangsters. She bought about $14 worth of gas, more than twice her usual purchase. The word on the street in Cortland is that someone choked Jessica there about a week before she died. Surveillance video shows her outside pumping her gas and perhaps being spoken to by someone off camera, while another camera captured a boisterous group of young black males congregating together inside the store at the same time. Jessica was still wearing her pajama pants from her nap earlier in the day, probably indicating she didn't intend to be out long. One black witness says Jessica was invited to a party taking place that night, and that she did change her plans and attend. If she did go to the party, it couldn't have been for long. About 90 minutes later, her car was seen burning off to the side of the road a few miles away, and Jessica herself was on fire. She was still barely alive, although firemen called to the scene said that every part of her body was severely burnt, except the soles of her feet. Before she died, she managed to blurt out the name or names, reports vary, of her attackers. It's widely known in the community, though never mentioned in the controlled media, and definitely never mentioned by the local police or prosecutor, that one name was that of one of her black boyfriends, widely reported to be Eric or Derek. It's a miracle that she was even able to speak before she died, because according to first responders at the scene, gasoline or another similar accelerant was poured down her throat and sprayed up her nose just before she was set on fire. Most interestingly, just days before Jessica's murder, an IQ-challenged black woman from Cortland, calling herself Tipu on Facebook, posted a call to burn and rape white children. Quote, "Somebody need to rape all his kids in front of him, then sit the house on fire and watch them burn. I bet he was a white man." Close quote. Tipu, according to locals, is actually Tiana Rudd, the wife or live-in girlfriend of Brewan Byers, a man who can be seen on surveillance video filling a gas can at the convenience store just a few feet away from Jessica Chambers while she put gas in her car. Tiana Rudd was sharing her statement, which, by the way, was an angry response to a hoax video that she apparently didn't know was a hoax, called "Cop Shoots One-Year-Old Black Baby, Mistakes Pacifier for Gun." She was sharing her call to burn white children with Sandy Rudd, who is Brian Rudd's aunt, the same Brian Rudd who was Jessica Chambers' former black boyfriend. And get this. This video was posted to Facebook by someone using the name Derek Jackson, the same first name as Jessica's last word, uttered to a first responder while she was burning to death. And this video was posted one day before Jessica died. Despite the fact that social media are alive and buzzing with facts about the racial aspects of Jessica's murder and Jessica's life, watching the Jewish-controlled mainstream media, you'd get the impression that no one has even mentioned race, and that the local white honor students are just as much suspects as are the Negro gangbangers with whom Jessica had been degrading herself until recently. They did deign to mention Brian Rudd, one of Jessica's black boyfriends when she was in high school, but only to make it clear that he was no longer a suspect since he had moved to Iowa some time ago. When he was considered a possible suspect, they kept his name and pictures out of view. The closest the controlled media have come to hinting at the real dynamics of this murder was when a local television reporter stated that people on the street weren't saying much to reporters because they personally knew the person or persons they strongly suspected, and that those persons knew them, too. The local prosecutor, John Champion, acts like a man overshadowed by fear. Spooked, perhaps, by the vicious response of local blacks and possibly black gang leaders when he failed to prosecute a recent hit-and-run killing of a black man by local teens as a hate crime, or spooked, perhaps, by federal government intervention in that case and or this one, about which we haven't been told, Champion carefully navigates the minefield of race and gangs by trying hard never to mention them. On December 9th, he said, "No, we don't have gangs." But 2 days ago, after social and alternative media had made the truth painfully obvious, he switched to, quote, "Well, we certainly have a gang problem in this county, just like there are in all the other counties," close quote. One wonders who really rules Panola County. The constituted authorities? Or the black gangs with their intimidation, their violence, and their ever-growing stacks of $100 bills. One wonders if certain suspects are off limits, despite Champion's assurances that nothing is off the table in his investigation. One also wonders just whose investigation this really is, since Champion admits that the regime's ATF and FBI have moved in. One agency of the regime in Washington that regularly intervenes in racially sensitive cases like this one, and like the insurrection in Ferguson, Missouri, is the Community Relations Service, or CRS, a little-known division of Washington's Justice Department, under Eric Holder no less than the FBI or the JTTF. The word on social media is that CRS is on the scene in Mississippi already, though they keep their activities secret. From their own website, we learn, quote, "The Community Relations Service is the department's peacemaker for community conflicts and tensions arising from differences of race, color, national origin, gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, religion, and disability. The agency works with all parties, including state and local units of government, private and public organizations, civil rights groups, and local community leaders. CRS assists communities in developing local mechanisms and community capacity to prevent tension and violent hate crimes from occurring in the future. CRS works in all 50 states and the U.S. territories, and in communities large and small, rural, urban, and suburban. CRS's highly skilled conflict resolution specialists, called conciliators, have helped resolve thousands of cases involving excessive use of force incidents, hate crimes, demonstrations, changing community demographics, and many other emotionally charged issues. They are required by law to conduct their activities in confidence and without publicity. Since CRS's activities are federally funded, conciliators are able to offer services without cost. Conciliators deploy to communities nationwide from 14 regional offices." Close quote. In other words, the regime's CRS comes into a situation like that in Panola County, Mississippi, and works hard to make sure that neither prosecutors nor reporters nor victims' family members utter the words black boyfriend, black gangs, black on white crime, interracial crime, or even hint at the extreme vulnerability of young white women who get involved with blacks. And we pay for that criminal censorship, obfuscation, and misdirection. We pay for the preservation and protection of the multiracialist paradigm that is killing us. According to researcher Angela Taylor, what happened to Jessica Chambers wasn't unique. The following 16 victims had one thing in common. They were all white, and they were all set on fire by blacks. Robin and Manny Aldridge. Just last week, a beloved special needs teacher and her high school junior daughter from Charlottesville, Virginia, were beaten before they were burned in a house fire. Police arrested a black man named Gene Everett Washington and charged him with 2 counts of first-degree murder. Michael Brewer. 15-year-old Michael from Miami had burns over 60% of his body after 3 black classmates poured alcohol on him and set him on fire. All 3 are serving time in prison. Alan Goyne, a 13-year-old from Kansas City, his 2 black teen attackers put him in a bear hug, poured gasoline on him, and set him on fire, saying, "This is what you get, white boy." Gabriella Penalba, a 23-year-old teacher in Knoxville, Tennessee, was set on fire by a 15-year-old black student. She briefly turned her back to the class when the student lit her hair and shirt ablaze. Catherine Kit Grazioli. Colorado Springs firefighters found Kit's 87-year-old body burning on a trail after a nearby resident called to report the fire. Officers arrested a black 21-year-old, Marcus Smith, and charged him with first-degree murder. Kit was a deacon at her church and loved by the community. Jonathan Foster. In Houston, Mona Nelson, a black 44-year-old woman, abducted and killed 12-year-old Jonathan with a blowtorch on Christmas Eve, later dumping his body in a ditch. She was found guilty of capital murder and sentenced to life in prison. The story was getting mainstream media coverage until they arrested a black woman. Kenneth Athley, beaten with a hammer, stabbed, doused with chemicals, and set on fire. 87-year-old Kenneth survived to testify against his black male attacker. Luke Fleischman, who died when a black teenager who was prosecuted as an adult and sentenced to 7 years for the hate crime, set the 18-year-old on fire who was sleeping on a bus in San Francisco. Richard Michael Carter. Two black brothers were arrested for shooting and burning Richard, a father from South Carolina. Flo Violet Parker, the 67-year-old homeless woman from California, was set on fire by a black man as she slept on a bench. Nancy Harris, the 76-year-old grandmother, was killed when a black man set fire to her while she was working at a convenience mart. She was loved in her Texas hometown and known as Grandma to everyone. Melinda McCormick, a black woman, and two black men beat and burned Melinda to death. Jimmy Sanders was shot and burned after stopping to help two black men, Eric Ellis, 28, and Malcolm Melton, 22, with car trouble. He didn't answer his phone. I called about 8 or 9 times. About an hour after he wouldn't answer, I got really, really nervous and upset, Betty Sanders said. Jimmy was 65 and also from Mississippi, where Jessica Chambers was just burned. Raymond Vachols. Raymond died after his black neighbor, Terrence Hale, attacked him and his wife and set fires. Elizabeth and Raymond had been married for 58 years. Do you think that's enough to be called an epidemic of blacks setting whites on fire? Do you think the controlled media will ever bother to mention it or even mention the correlation of these horrific deaths of whites? In our last 3 American Dissident Voices programs, I've brought you the facts of black savagery in Africa's past and America's present. I've shown you that the regime in Washington has no desire to protect us from the escalating racial war on the very existence of white people, and in fact is the instrumentality of the organized Jewish groups which created that war in the first place. I've shown you that state and local authorities are intimidated and penned in to the point that they do nothing for hours upon hours as blacks literally burn a city down, and they are afraid to even speak of the existence, to say nothing of the dangers of black gangs and interracial relationships, even in the immediate aftermath of a white woman being burned alive in their own hometown. These leaders who do little or nothing for their people in our hour of need because they fear the media men and the money men are not really white men at all, but only empty shells. They are the blancos, white ciphers, order takers, pension waiters, vessels of emptiness. They will not protect you. They cannot protect you. In the coming cataclysm, real white men and women will emerge who will sweep away the rotten old order and build something new in its place. A new set of values, a new morality will arise too to replace the old. The morality of multiracial political correctness is the opposite of what is needed. The religious beliefs that led one of Jessica's family members to call for the forgiveness of the killer are worse than useless, too. We at the National Alliance will continue to tell the truths that the Blancos and their masters keep from us, and we will teach the rising generation of our people the true morality and values, which alone can ensure our existence and progress into the infinite future. I invite you to be a part of that. On my next program, I will explore the biological realities behind the savagery and primitive nature of Africans and the largely suppressed scientific facts which prove that they are far from equal and, in fact, should be categorized at the very least as a separate subspecies. This time of year, the winter solstice, is sacred to our people. It was considered sacred long before anyone formalized or systematized the deep feelings that we men and women of Europe had in our hearts about this season. There's something special about the white crystalline snow, the snap in the air, the warm hearth, the bright and happy faces of children gathered round the fragrant pine tree, and the tear in the eye that we older folks get when we remember Yuletides past. Even on the eve of a long winter, the magic of this season gives us a feeling of the joy and infinite preciousness of life. We of Europe are essentially people of the North. Venice, Italy is farther north than Minneapolis, Minnesota, for example. And it was the northern climate that shaped us in many ways over long ages of evolution. Europe is a place of dramatic seasonal changes, and, not coincidentally, so are many of the new homes that European man has staked out around the globe. And those seasonal changes were very important to our ancestors. They knew that they had to prepare for winter in summer's time of plenty. Any tribe which did not have the discipline or foresight to do so would perish, and its genes would no longer form part of the European gene pool. Thus, nature's hard lessons shaped us, upbred us, turned us from beings that could hardly be called human into beings that can contemplate the infinities of space and time and ponder the meaning of life. The seasons of old Europe, in fact, if we do not lose ourselves through racial mixing in the modern frontierless world we have built for ourselves, have given us the power to strike out into a new frontier beyond this earth. Besides increasing the size of our frontal lobes, the climate of our little peninsula shaped our souls in many other ways, and among other things gave us a special feeling for the seasons which marked every aspect of our lives. The riot of sex and life reborn in the spring. The glory and plenty of summer. The harvest labor's majesty and melancholy of autumn. And the bleak vastness and purity of winter. But our ancestors were observant people and learned early on to watch the skies for signs of the cycles of the earth. And while it was quite obvious that winter was the time of shorter days, what was not perhaps so immediately obvious, except to the observant, was that the southward passage of the sun ceased and then reversed itself right at the beginning of winter, giving a sign even before the coldest days began, that the longer and warmer days of spring were indeed on their way. This seeming paradox must have appeared as an almost magical event, a promise of life embedded in the nature of time and the universe itself. As the retreating sun changed direction, it lost its apparent momentum and seemed to stand still in the sky, rising and setting at almost the same position for several days running until it picked up speed going in the other apparent direction, back towards the north, making the days in our hemisphere longer again. This time of the sun standing still is called the winter solstice, solstice being a combination of the Latin words for sun and to stand motionless. Stonehenge was built on a British plain by one branch of our ancestors some 4,000 years ago to mark the seasons by its alignment with the sun and other heavenly bodies. So this is an appropriate season to reflect on the past, present, and future of our European race, the future of which is of prime concern to the National Alliance. In many ways, we face an uncertain winter, not a literal winter, but a dark age, a winter time for which we as a people are ill prepared. When we allowed the Jewish minority to take control of our news and entertainment media in the last century, we did not know that they had an agenda that included our dispossession and ultimate extinction. We foolishly thought that they were just an odd variety of white folks and would quickly blend in with the rest of us. So the concentration of the mass media in their hands was of little consequence. We have paid with our fortunes and our lives for that mistake and stand in great peril because of it. When they want us to accept more immigrants, to destroy our genetic uniqueness and murder us as a race, they turn on the virtual violins and appeal to our race's instinctive kindness and sympathy for the downtrodden. They falsely accuse racial realists and white people who love their race of being haters. But when they want us to kill their enemies for them in their Middle Eastern wars, they crank up the real hate propaganda, cook up false intelligence and scare stories about weapons of mass destruction that might streak from Tehran or Damascus to Peoria, and send our young people to die and to slaughter whole generations of people who never meant us any harm, breeding millions of Osama bin Ladens in the process. The Jewish supremacists smile and even laugh when terrorists strike. And they fail to warn us, even when they know it's about to happen, because they know that such attacks alone can provide a believable backdrop for their lies about how we have to kill people in nations that threaten Israel, or nations that don't want a government supervised by Jews. So Americans die overseas in other people's wars, while America herself dies, her borders undefended, as her founding race is rapidly replaced by third worlders who could never even dream of maintaining, much less building, the scientific and cultural edifice of the West. We're bleeding from 1,000 wounds, and most of us don't even know it. White people form an ever-shrinking percentage of the Earth's population, and the number of white women in their childbearing years is shrinking even faster, as easy abortion, contraception, miscegenation, and careerism have caused so many white women to terminate their family lines, causing a distinct, possibly terminal aging of the white population that remains. Everything depends on us. A future in which young white lovers will still love as only they can, where white scientists will discover and explore new worlds of inner and outer space that we can't even imagine now, where the laughter and bright faces of white children will still exist, a future in which new Beethovens and Aristotles will still be born, where the greatest heights we have reached in the past will only be the foothills of the peaks and mountain vistas to come. That is the world we can build if only we give our all and ensure that every white person hears our message and that every expression of our message is as perfect as we can make it. That's what your donations to the National Alliance make possible. So this is my Christmas card to you, my solstice message, my good Yule present. There is hope. Join with me. Join with the members of the National Alliance who are already awakening others, and help build the unimaginably great future that only we can build, and that we can surely build. Ring out the old and ring in the new. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. Please write to us at National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to keep on thinking free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout.